Well, it's hard to believe, but 3 years ago, we lost one of the giants, one of the honestly most talented people I've ever met. Harold Ramis passed away just 3 short years ago. His life has been chronicled in a book, Ghostbuster's Daughter, by, strangely enough, his daughter, Violet, who has written a book that you and I have both said we can't wait to read. Violet Ramos-Steele joins us right now on the phone. Violet, how are you? Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm not kidding when I say I had the honor of meeting your dad, sometimes with Wendy. We had him on the show, sometimes privately, and every time I met him, it was just a life-changing experience. He was such a good guy to talk to.
He really was the best. I mean, I think most people probably know him as Egon from Ghostbusters, but, you know, he was also a writer and director who really sort of, you know, changed the rules of comedy with his early movies, and he was just a genuinely good and interesting person.
And it spans the age group, too, because I have two teenage sons that adore him from Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. And then tried and true favorites. You know, I'm in my 50s. All right, I revealed my age. He's just been so funny and so unique. And boy, do we miss him.
Yeah, I mean, I miss him, too. And I think, you know, one of the great things about, you know, what he did was that he left a lot of himself behind in his work, and we get to keep enjoying that forever.
That's the magic of having a parent who's a writer or a director or an actor, is that you can always go back and see them at different stages in their lives. What did you learn about your dad you didn't know?
I mean, he was very open with me, you know, from the time I was very small. So, you know, it wasn't so much, there weren't really any surprises, but it was great to uncover these, you know, different interviews or videos that he'd done on YouTube. Like, I really enjoyed just the research process of pulling all of my memories together along with, you know, all of this media that he left.
And just the inspiration he had on so many other people, including evidently Seth Rogen, who's done the foreword. Where's that connection?
Yeah. Well, they worked together in Knocked Up, which was directed by Judd Apatow. And they both, you know, have said that my dad was a big influence on their desire to go into comedy and on their sensibility. So he, you know, always sort of thought of both of them as his comedy sons. And, you know, so they've been very supportive of the book. And, you know, we all just miss him.
Violet. Although I bet Seth smokes a lot more weed than your dad did.
I can see that.
I don't know.
Interesting. All right, so I need your version of this story because I've heard it from so many different people in so many different directions. He had an incredible friendship with Bill Murray that some say ended with Groundhog Day, that Bill Murray wanted it to be a certain way and your dad wanted the movie to be a different way, and that put a strain on their relationship that lasted years. What's your take on what happened there?
It did. I wouldn't say their friendship ended, more like it went on a long hiatus, because they did, you know, reconcile at the end of my dad's life. You know, they made so many great films together when they were young. I mean, they met, you know, very early on when my dad was at Second City working with Bill's older brother, Brian. And, you know, part of what everybody loves about Bill is that you never know what to expect. So I think that's why they worked so well together. And, you know, it all remains a mystery to me, but I'm just glad they got back together at the end and that they left all this great work.
But do you know, like, the genesis of this disagreement was over the direction that that particular movie would take? Can you verify that? Is that part true?
I don't think that was, you know, necessarily the reason. I mean, you'd have to ask Bill, honestly.
Oh.
But I think that, you know, it did put a strain, and I think that, you know, the production, you know, just sort of showed maybe that they were going in different directions.
Yeah.
There are so many things included in this book. There's a sweet little picture that I think everyone can relate to, because when you have a baby, there's just such a sweet picture of your dad holding you in his arms. Some interesting things. Talk about some of the things that are in this book as well as photos.
I mean, I tried to really, like I said, pull together my memories also with, you know, sort of the archive of what he left. Luckily, my mom was sort of an obsessive photographer and videographer, and so, you know, there's a lot of photos. That, you know, was something that I definitely wanted to include. And, you know, aside from that, I just sort of wrote down almost every memory I could think of and all the lessons that he gave me, and then I would go back and sort of fill them out a little more. And it really just grew organically into what it is in Ghostbuster's Daughter.
And some sweet little pictures of you with famous folk. Who are some of the people you got to hang out with as a little kid?
I mean, I was with my dad all the time when I was a kid, so I was on set with him a lot, and, you know, his colleagues were also his friends, so they were in and out of our house. I mean, from the SCTV days, Eugene Levy and Martin Short, then Doug Kenny, Gilda Radner, Bill, obviously, who was my godfather, you know, Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield. I mean, it was a real comedy
wow.
circus. Yeah, it was
Jim is
great.
So jealous. I mean, Bill is so jealous of your upbringing right now to hang with those
that's
people.
That's the Hall of Fame. You just mentioned the Comedy Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. Yeah. I'm lucky.
Your dad had this style, this comedic style, where he would underplay things. Like, I've never seen anyone underplay anything before. He was just a master of that. Where did that come from? Do you know?
I think it was innate. I mean, people used to ask him all the time, you know, were you a class clown in school? And he said, no, I wrote for the class clown. and I think he did. I think he was happiest sort of feeding, you know, the punchline to the other guy and setting him up. I mean, and that definitely also grew in his Second City years when, you know, the focus is all about making the other guy look good.
Right.
And there's something in the book where you all of a sudden, you talk about discovering that there was another child out there. Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of been picked up on as the scandalous topic, but it's really not. I mean, he had another child sort of at the end of my parents' marriage and before he remarried to my stepmother. And, nobody talked about it for years. I did find out, being my nosy childhood self, and he actually took me to the hospital when she was born, sort of as a buffer, I think. We didn't meet Molly, my sister, until I was 27 and she was 22. Her mom is Amy Heckerling, who's also a comedy director. But right away, you know, we just all could tell that we were family. She looks so much like my dad. She's very funny. We really became very close, and it's been like a great gift. So I'm happy to sort of, you know, officially make her part of the family with this book.
That is a wonderful moment to hear that. It really is.
Such a healthy way to look at it, Violet. I know a lot of people might have perceived it differently, but a great way to handle it all.
Yeah, I mean, my dad really, you know, sort of embraced the ambiguity of life. And, you know, he knew that we were all doing our best. And that means you make mistakes sometimes, but you just try to acknowledge them and be a good person and move on.
That's key. Be a good person. That really is what it's all about. Try to, the golden rule, treat mm-hmm. others as you would like to be treated. That's what we're supposed to do.
And when you don't, you know, don't ignore it.
Right.
Exactly.
Very true. Let's go back a little bit to SCTV, which I still consider to be the all-time funniest show of all time. Your dad was on it for the first season. He was the head writer over at SCTV. And there was a scene in there, that, and I recounted this with him one time when he was on with Wendy and me years and years ago. He did a scene called Dialing for Dollars with Mo Green. He played Mo Green, where they would call people at random, and if they could name the movie that was being shown, they won $500. And he called a guy that he thought's name was Paul Pope, but it was actually Pope Paul. And he asked Pope Paul if he knew which movie it was. And Pope Paul confessed that he wasn't watching, but he wanted to guess. And his guess was The Doberman Gang. And I said, that's the funniest thing in the world, that the Pope would know that the Doberman Gang existed. How does your dad come up with brilliance like that? It's just, it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew, you know, I mean, that's part of, you know, what I miss about him was he really had this dynamic mind and could pull from so many different influences and sources, and that's what made his comedy work.
So funny.
All right. And so, now correct me if I'm wrong, but Groundhog Day was shot in and about Woodstock, correct?
It was, yeah.
So Woodstock Theater, the Harold Ramis Auditorium, you're going to be out there, is it this Sunday at noon?
I will, yeah. I'm going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest on Saturday, and then I'm going up to Woodstock on Sunday. I can't wait.
A Conversation with Violet Ramis Steele, $35 admission. Now, this does include the book, which we cannot wait to read, Ghostbusters mm-hmm. Daughter, Life with My Dad, Harold Ramis. And register at readbetweenthelines.com, but lines is spelled a little differently, L-Y-N-E-S, readbetweenthelines.com. Are there still tickets available for that? Because I imagine that Harold Ramis Auditorium will fill up quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I believe so. Everyone has been really wonderful, and I think they're excited to, you know, be able to sort of honor my dad in this way.
What a coincidence to have it at a place called the Harold Ramis Auditorium. I don't know how that, sometimes things just work out, don't they? The early days of your dad, he wrote for Playboy magazine, didn't he?
He did. He was a jokes editor. Yeah, that was sort of a fluke, but he learned a lot there. I mean, he said that most of the jokes he got, the submissions were all the same. So anytime there was something new, he would put it aside to sort of savor later.
Yeah, yeah. And then he took to the stage. He started working here at Second City. Was he in awe of anybody, Violet? Was there anyone he was on the stage with, either at Second City or later on, that even he couldn't imagine the greatness that they were providing?
I think he was, I mean, he loved working with Joe Flaherty and Brian and Jim Fisher. I mean, it was a great cast at that time. I think, you know, maybe a year or so later when John Belushi came along, he was always sort of amazed by how brave and wild John was. And he just thought, oh, well, I'm not that guy, so I better find my place in this cast.
Yeah. I do have to say this for your dad, too. I know he didn't do a lot of dramatic work, but when he did, there's a movie called Stealing Home that comes to mind that he did with Jodie Foster. He could really pull that off. Do you know what I mean, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, he had a wisdom about him, I think, that came across on screen. He was, you know, an easygoing, likable guy, but he was smart, and you knew it, I think, as soon as you saw him.
Did he want you to go into a similar line of work, or was he against that?
They didn't put pressure on me either way. I mean, I had to rebel against something, right? So I didn't want to go into the family business, and he was very supportive of that. He'd also, you know, taught when he was younger and worked in a locked psych ward, so he was happy that I sort of went into the helping profession.
Any regrets that you know of from your dad, from Harold Ramis?
No, he really, you know, he believed in living your life without regrets. I mean, like I said, we all make mistakes, but if you change one thing, then you change everything. And he really was happy with where he was, you know, in life.
I have to say this for him. A lot of guys, when they reach the pinnacle of success that your dad reached, they would have headed out and stayed in California and stuff like that. But there was something about him loving the North Shore. He stayed local. How come, do you think?
He loved Chicago. I mean, I think he had a great sort of childhood and upbringing here. He really loved his family and felt comfortable in the Midwest. I mean, L.A. is also great, but it just wasn't him. He was never sort of the driving around in your convertible Hollywood person.
I ran into him once. He and I shared a birthday. November 21st is his birthday, right?
Yeah, great day.
It was a couple of days before our birthday, and I talked to him and wished him a happy birthday, and he wished me one. And we talked about the pressure of having a birthday like November 21st. And the truth of it is there is no pressure at all in having that birthday. But he and I just spent 10 minutes talking about how much you owe it to society to be, you know, have a happy birthday. It was just such a great conversation. It was idiotic, but it was great at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that captures him pretty perfectly. I mean, he could connect, you know, over anything pretty much. And I'm not surprised that sharing the same birthday, you guys had that connection.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, idiotic is kind of what made him work. Some of these things were so off the wall and so out there. But I got to admit, he was also very easy on the eyes. He was really attractive. He was such a good-looking guy, and funny and good-looking going together. He was quite the package.
Well, he would love to hear you say that. yeah, I mean, you know, there are Facebook groups now, I think, of women who love Harold Ramis, you know.
I'll have to join that later.
Wendy's in.
I don't think it was around, you know, back then, but, you know, people really are still engaging with his work and appreciating him for the, you know, for the person he was.
Violet, I got to ask you this, too. For years and years and years, they said, keep making Ghostbusters movies. We did one. We did another one. It's time for another one. It took a long time to do one. And then when they did it, they kind of remixed it and changed it just a little bit. Did he want to continue making Ghostbusters movies, or did he just feel that enough had been done already with those?
I think he really could have gone either way. I mean, he worked on a few different Ghostbusters 3 scripts and was enthusiastic about them, but it was very hard to pull everyone in together. And so, you know, he was okay with the fact that he wasn't able to make another one. You know, in terms of the 2016 Ghostbusters, you know, I think he would have really embraced it and felt sort of honored and happy that part of his work, you know, continued to inspire so much creativity.
But when he was writing the first one, it wasn't with the goal of him acting in it, right? Wasn't that originally going to be John Belushi, or am I reading that wrong?
Well, I think Dan Aykroyd wrote the original script, and he had thought of it sort of as a Blues Brothers, you know, an interplanetary occult Blues Brothers. And then John passed away, and it came to Ivan, and he brought my dad in to sort of bring it back down to earth. They were a great team.
Yep.
We've lost so many legends. I imagine heaven is a big party right now.
I mean, I like to think of it that way.
I do, too. And 69 years old, my mom passed away at 69, and I remember when she died, and then David Bowie died at 69. I'm like, oh, my God, my mom was the same age as David Bowie. In our minds.
Alan Rickman also. I mean, it's,
yeah.
I'm sorry about your mom. I mean, it's very hard to lose people that you're close to, but also, you know, these sort of icons of the culture in music and film, and that's a hard part of getting older.
We were all robbed when your dad passed away.
No question about it. Violet Ramis Steele's book is called Ghostbusters' Daughter. It's available wherever books are sold. Violet, well done.
Thank you so much. It was nice talking to you.
And if you'd like to meet Violet Ramis Steele, you can head to the Woodstock Theater on Sunday, June 10th at noon. Of course, the Harold Ramis Auditorium. You can go to readbetweenthelines.com, a little different spelling on lines, L-Y-N-E-S, readbetweenthelines.com. Good luck with the book. And if you're ever in Chicago, please come see us in the studio.
Oh, that would be great. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Violet. Good luck. All right, a quick break and then some news. And then we'll hand the reins over to Steve Bertrand for the Wintrust Business Lunch.